Hey Brian, hey Rick, Shooter McGavin here on a Masters weekend, day two. Wow. So I heard your From the Tips podcast is kind of badass.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of From the Tips. It's me, boy Brian, always joined by my fantastic co-host Rick Landis. How we doing, good buddy?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Doing well. Just made a plank grilled salmon for dinner. So this comes on a piece of wood, which is interesting. It caught fire, so that was great.
So that's not supposed to happen.
I don't know. Because I cooked it to as the directions said, put the plank on the grill. Everything was fine until it reached about like 120 internal. We were only like 25 degrees away from it being done. Then the wood just was like, and I'm done. Time to catch fire. Which actually added kind of a nice like smoky burnt crust, but like it didn't affect the fish on the inside. So it was like kind of actually nice.
Maybe that's what it's supposed to do.
Maybe, but I saw it on fire and I was like, I don't like that.
That looks wrong.
That's not really what I was intending. That's
don't think it's supposed to look like that.
No. You went out for dinner tonight, correct?
Yeah, we got some sushi tonight. No big deal. Well, Father's Day dinner for Gina's dad. Just grab some sushi.
Well, where'd you go to? The
Sakura.
Such good sushi there, dude.
So cheap. I love it.
It's like it feels fancy, but the prices are not, which is fantastic. But time. I mean, you could really say that about any sushi. I don't know how, because to me, it's always felt like the fish market prices are always ridiculous, and then you go get sushi, and you can get a roll for less than $7.
Depends on what kind of sushi you're getting.
That's fair. Like the sashimis are expensive.
Yeah.
That's because there's like half a slab of fish on top of it.
Yeah. Sashimi's delicious though.
I love sashimi.
So good.
Speaking of seafood though, I gotta get me to Red Lobster quickly to get some crab legs because I've had a hankering and I got this $50 gift card from Christmas burning a hole.
There you go.
Wallet.
Crab legs are delicious. I don't blame
you. They're so good. Oh my gosh. That's one of those foods that I feel like even those that don't like shellfish all that much, like don't like shrimp, don't like lobster, can probably still get down with crab legs.
Dunk that bitch in some butter.
Yeah, really just it's really just a vehicle for butter. You know, right? You know, like how most sandwiches are just vehicles for mayonnaise. That could be controversial. It might be.
It probably is, but that's fine.
Is a sandwich a vehicle for mayonnaise? I think only a few people share that opinion with me. But anyways, we are a golf podcast after all, and we do talk about sports from time to time. So, Rick, what happened in sports history?
A pretty notable one here, 1936. Jesse Owens of the United States sets the 100-meter record at 10.2, which has since been broken as far as I know. I don't really pay attention to track and field too much, but I think it's under 10 at this point. What else did we got? We had the LPGA Western Golf Open, which was a women's golf open with Louise Suggs coming out on top. That was in 1953. If you don't recognize the name, that's probably why, because it was a while ago.
A very long time ago.
U.S. Open golf. We have in 1964, 1966. It's all over the place. But in 1966, notably, Billy Casper erased a 7-stroke deficit on the final 9 holes to tie Arnold Palmer and won the 18-hole playoff on Monday by 4 strokes.
Well, I'll be damned.
So go him. It's a good guy to take out in a playoff.
I'd say so.
1973, notable. San Francisco Giants, Bobby Bonds sets
NL Barry Bonds' record. Dad.
with 22 leadoff home runs. So go him.
I feel like Kyle Schwarber can make a run of that record.
Maybe.
I feel like he could.
He's crushing it right now in June.
He's having a day. You know, I in talking about baseball and Kyle Schwarber, the reason I knew immediately off the top of my head that Bobby Bonds is Barry Bonds' dad is because I just watched a video on YouTube. A guy that on YouTube does like these like mini docu-series type things. It's Baseball Doesn't Exist is the page name for anybody interested. But he did one on why Barry Bonds is like the most hated man in baseball, basically. They referred to Bobby, his dad. So, and his uncle was Willie Mays, you know, the shoulder basket catch. Yeah, that guy.
Okay. So,
one hell of a baseball family. But to continue on the Kyle Schwarber thing, yesterday, somebody told me I remind them of Kyle Schwarber. Now, I don't know if that's meant to be a compliment. I'm taking it that way, though.
I would.
I'm taking it that way.
No offense, I don't see it, but
neither do I at all. But hey, I'll take it. I love that for myself.
Take it and run with it. Yeah, it's the same with the whole Zach Ertz thing that I had.
Exactly, right? You know, but hey,
you don't agree with it, but you just take it. Yeah. And then we're going to round it out in the 1980s this week because I could go on forever. There's a lot of cool things that happened, but being that we both played rugby for a few years in college, notably the first Rugby World Cup final took place, and New Zealand beat France 29-9.
Ooh, I know shock New Zealand was in the championship and also winning that. They've just been perpetually good at
always have been, always will be.
Yeah, just forever. But
well, sorry, I have to talk about this one too. Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. But in 1994 today, O.J. Simpson was arraigned. So that's
there you go.
Pretty big news. Everyone knew about that one, whether that's you were huge. A fan of football or not.
sometimes when a YouTube video about that will cross my feed, I'll click it and watch it. I really don't have any idea like about the trial, the drama, about all that stuff. I love the fact that like Ford Bronco sales went through the absolute roof after the chase.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious to me that the American society looked at that chase for a murderer and said, F-Ford Broncos is getting
pretty fast. I mean,
Is anybody talking about this? That thing's getting after it a little bit. I mean, there's like 14 police cars behind him, and he's gapping them right now. I mean, I gotta buy one of those things. That's one of my favorite fun facts about that case, other than the whole glove fitting thing, which I also find.
Yeah, I also enjoy that Shrek references it.
Yes, which is so good. Yeah. The Shrek references are incredible. Was that from 2? Was that Shrek 2?
Yeah.
Oh, remember Knights, which is the reference to cops?
Yeah.
Yeah, so good. The pepper spray being a pepper grinder?
Yeah.
I love that movie.
Just details.
Hot take, and Rick and I both agree about this. Shrek 2 is better than Shrek 1.
I think it comes with age. I think as you get older, you realize that Shrek 2 is better.
See, you realize Shrek 2 is better once I feel like you get a real grasp on how life-changing Fairy Godmother's rendition of I Need a Hero truly is.
True.
You know, and then you become an adult. That's just being an adult, you know. Like, pretty sure, much, yeah. We have mortgages and dogs, etc. But that, I believe, is when I really gained manhood, is when that song transcended my life. Either way, though, you know whose life has transcended? Mostly since his win at the Wells Fargo just a couple of weeks ago. Wyndham Clark, who is now your U.S. Open champion, winning his first major. Not too far removed from his first PGA Tour win, Wyndham Clark. He won the Wells Fargo back in May 7th. So literally just a month removed from his first ever career win on tour. He gets a U.S. Open and does it, I wouldn't say in dominating fashion, but definitely the coolest fashion I could think of in a very long time. Everybody was talking about, you know, Ricky and Rory going into Sunday. Everybody kind of thought Wyndham Clark was going to, you know, shaking his boots and maybe crumble, but he stayed so strong. And I was talking to one of my coworkers, our good buddy Colin, at work today. We were talking about the Sunday broadcast where it felt like every single second shot he had or approach shot that he had, somebody was talking about, oh, this is a bad lie. He's going to really have to work just to make his par here. And then he would make some incredible shot, pocket it to 2 feet, mm-hmm. put in his birdie and walk away. Do you think that was the main reason why he was able to, A, stay in contention on a Sunday, and B, continue to lead and then subsequently win the U.S. Open?
Yeah, I mean, he played out of his mind. Like you said, everybody was expecting him to crumble. The pressure was there. But as much pressure as he had, he didn't have nearly as much pressure as the other two guys that were talked about probably more than twice as much as him, even when he was on the screen, mostly because he was paired with Ricky. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Rory was mentioned just as much, if not more, the entire time, because those are the two guys that the most pressure was on. And Wyndham Clark is a 29-year-old who just burst onto the scene a few weeks ago at the Wells Fargo. He's got nothing riding on this. And the fact that he can just play pressure-free in a U.S. Open with no expectations on him at all is huge.
Yeah. And you bring up a really good point. He is, as far as, like, you know, major champion winning golf is concerned, he's very young at 29. Yeah. And obviously you said he kind of just came onto the scene in a blaze of glory recently. He basically did that round one here at the U.S. Open. First hole at the U.S. Open, just a casual eagle for Wyndham Clark there on the par five. And then goes and shoots a day one 64 to just really announce his presence there on the course. Unfortunately, maybe not unfortunately, depending on how you look at it. It was overshadowed by the incredible Ricky Fowler 62. Yeah. So on the first day too. So, I mean, this U.S. Open got off to an incredibly fast start, right? Like day one, it felt like we were already on Sunday. Okay. Dudes were pocketing 9 under, 8 under rounds. Mm-hmm. And your head was spinning. You were going, okay.
Yeah.
This is the U.S. Open, usually known for its impossible scoring.
Yeah.
You have to battle for every par. If you make a birdie, run off the green before it eats you alive. Were you disappointed for day one when you saw scores like 10 under and 9 under?
I wasn't, because I know that for the most part, things like that tend to even out. Like, there was a lot of people freaking out online, like, oh, we're going to have a minus 30 winner at the U.S. Open. And it usually just doesn't end up working out like that. The lowest score I can remember in recent history was Dustin Johnson's, like, minus 27 or something like that.
Yeah,
at the one tournament that he won. And that course was playing incredibly easy, and he was on top of his game, on top of the world at the time. Things like this tend to even out, and it is very obvious when you look at someone like Ricky Fowler, who started off with a record low round and ended up shooting plus 5 on Sunday to drop down to T5.
Yeah.
Like, when it comes to courses like this, you can expect that things are going to change, especially when it has the I'm not sure what word I'm looking for, when it has the expectation, I guess, to be as hard as it is. These greenskeepers seeing a 62 on Friday or on Thursday, they're not letting that happen again. Those pins are going to be a foot off of the rough, 3 feet away from a bunker, like on the 290-yard par three, which whole another situation that we can briefly talk about if you want. But yeah. 270, unreal. No reason that a par three should be that long. But anyway, I digress. It evens out. The leader on Thursday was like minus 8 or whatever, and the winner was minus 10. Yeah. There's no reason to panic. It's just how it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you bring up a really good point. Eventually, it usually works itself out in the wash. One of the days, pretty much in any given major or very important golf tournament, always has ridiculous scores for some reason. Like, the entire field just shoots either ridiculously well because maybe it rained that morning, all the greens are sticking well, maybe the pin placements aren't as hard as you know they intended to make them. Maybe the ball just rolls really well on the greens and the guys have a really good look at birdie pretty much every single hole. But that's why golf is a four-day thing, right? You can have a day of your life on Thursday and still miss the cut on Friday because you absolutely explode. Like, that's just how golf works. So eventually it will always even itself out. You're right.
And just in general, like, people every round there tends to be someone shooting low. It just depends on where they're at on the leaderboard. Like Sunday was Tommy Fleetwood. I could be just speaking out of my ass right now, but I'm pretty sure his 63 was the lowest Sunday round in a major. He ended up T5 because he started the day plus two. So he ended up tied with Ricky Fowler at minus five. Like, he had an amazing day, but no one's talking about it because he didn't win. Mm-hmm. But it still happened. You know what I mean? Like, it always happens, and it's so much more magnified on a Thursday because those are the only scores that we have at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody looks at the Thursdays and has a panic attack because the scores are low, but you're right. It always works itself out. I mean, that I totally forgot about the Tommy Fleetwood run there on Sunday. That was incredible.
Yeah. Amazing round, but he wasn't close enough. Like,
let's not forget that, a guy we'll talk about shortly here, Rory McIlroy, he has the lowest total tournament score for somebody that didn't win the major at 271 strokes total. That is the lowest anyone has ever shot and not won a major. So that's on it by itself. There just shows that, there are days where guys are going to shoot out of their mind and days where it's not necessarily going to be that way because of the winning score being 10 under. US Opens in the past have won with 2 under, 3 under scores. Yeah. Every course is different, though, and every course doesn't always have the means like Winged Foot did to have a foot of rough. Okay. And some courses don't have grass that grows like that. And that's, I think with LACC, that really wasn't even what they were going for, right? They were going for the fairways that are almost impossible to stick. They're going for the greens that roll every which way and are made out of glass, basically. That's where they're going to try and beat the golfers, not because of the rough.
Yeah.
Which is another thing that we'll get into here shortly. But first, got to talk about it because it was all anybody was talking about. Ricky Fowler. Is he back? Is Ricky Fowler back in action? Is it early to bring that up? Absolutely. But we have just been praying for this man to get back, right? And you can look at his last 10 starts, and it's pretty good. The showings are really good. T13, T17, T10, T15, T14. Cut the PGA Championship. Not great, but T6, T9, T5 at the U.S. Open, right? So he's performing well again. He's back to what, Ricky was supposed to be for a long time. And one statistic continuously stands out here, and it's his putting, right? Yeah. But we'll get into that, Jazz. But I want to ask you first, do you think our boy Ricky Fowler is back?
Unfortunately, no, for a few reasons. One, we haven't seen a win yet.
Right.
And two, I know it's a major, so there's other caveats that you have to throw in there, but there's no reason that you shouldn't be able to capitalize on a minus eight on a Thursday and having that hot of a start. Like, I understand you're going to have your ups and downs, but you can't have a plus five round on a Sunday, no matter where you're at. Like, when you start minus eight on the weekend, and your last round is a plus five, that's just not good.
Yeah.
And the guys that are quote unquote there, since we're saying is he back, they're not making those kind of mistakes. They're going to be consistently 3 or 4 under as opposed to 8 under and then 5 over. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that consistency is what gives them these wins, which is what we need to see out of Ricky for me to start considering him potentially back.
Yeah, and you bring up a really good point. Even when you look at his scores throughout those pretty good finishes recently, it's an absolute roller coaster. He's got no consistency whatsoever. He's not going 5 under, 3 under, 4 under, 6 under, in in a weekend, he's going, you know, 8 under, and all of a sudden he's 5 over, and then he's 3 over, and then he's like 10 under for no reason on Sunday to put himself back into the top 25. It's been an absolute whirlwind for Ricky here. But and you also bring up a really good point that we haven't seen a win from his last win was in 2019, man, the Waste Management Phoenix Open. That was 4 years ago, yeah. More than 4 years ago. That's a long time to go without a win. Obviously, we saw Jordan Spieth do it, and then Jordan Spieth came back with a huge resurgence and is now considered one of the better golfers in the world right now. As far as Ricky is concerned, I'm also not going to say he's back as much as I want to, but there's definitely something to be said about the way his last 10 starts have gone. I think that's a good amount of rounds in a row where you're playing well. You know, you can kind of put the PGA Championship aside. It's a major championship. You know, it happens. Missed cuts happen. But you look at what he's working with here, and that's something to build on, which is something that he's been missing for years now. It's just something to build on. Every time he found even like a little bit of success, it was just immediately torn down by like 3 missed cuts in a row.
Yeah.
And he would do it in just the most egregious fashion, wearing all bright orange. His irons were the most impossible thing that he could ever hit. And that's something I wanted to bring up to you, because I know that we've made fun of him in the past for his wardrobe choices. I was pleasantly surprised with his rebrand here at the US Open. I think him and Puma have a good thing going here. His Cobra clubs were looking good out there. I think this whole rebrand, I mean, he did throw in the orange hat one of the days. I feel like he has to. But he
on a Sunday.
Full creamsicle, you know?
Yeah, and I don't want it to be misconstrued that I'm hating on Ricky, because I know that I personally have been vocally critical of his appearance and how he carries himself as far as his outfit and stuff like that goes.
Right.
But what I'm saying about him right now is exactly what I said about Jordan Spieth before he got his win. It was the same thing. He started to play more consistently. We started to see top 25s, top 10s. And you asked me the same question. Is he back? And I said, no, we haven't seen him win yet. And then he won. And I still said no, because it was such a low level event that I needed to see something a little bit more, even if it was like followed up by a top 5. And it's the same thing with Ricky. It's so tough to say that someone's back when they haven't even won a tournament.
Yeah. And not just not won a tournament, but not won one in 4 years. You know,
I do like the rebrand. I think the creamsicle hat is about as much as I can handle as far as that's concerned. I wish he would go with like a base black, orange, or gray with the Puma or I forget if he has Puma or Cobra on his hat, whichever one it is. The logo being the creamsicle color, and then his shirt kind of matching that. Like he had the orange and white pinstripe shirt on on Sunday, and then the hat. If the colors of his hat were reversed, then I think that's like a perfect amount. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
I respected the homage to the younger Ricky by having at least the creamsicle hat. You know, he didn't go full orange pants, orange shirt, orange hat, which he used to do ad nauseum. But remember, this is a guy much like Jordan Spieth, who exploded onto the scene early in his career, was world number one in 2018, and last year had his worst year professionally. I don't know if he was ever in contention to lose his card, but he was 169th in the world golf rankings in 2022.
Which is wild.
He's back up to 35 now. So he's back in the top 50, which I think is where he deserves to be if he just keeps playing the way he's playing now. One funny thing of note here about the two gentlemen we just talked to before we wrap up talking about those two, Wyndham Clark and Ricky Fowler, little fun tidbit about the putters they were using. So, funny enough, the Odyssey Versa Jailbird, probably not a putter that anybody before this weekend would ever know about. But Ricky Fowler borrowed a putter from his caddy one tournament recently and started draining pretty much every single putt that he hit. And he was like, wow, this works so great. I needed putting as an aspect of my game because I was struggling with it. He called up Odyssey and was like, hey, I know you don't make this putter anymore, but I need it and in these exact specs, and I will pay you. And Odyssey was like, sounds good to me, dude. Sounds like a plan. So they made it again. They sent it over to him, and he went on this ridiculous run that we just talked about. I mean, in his last 10, he has majority top 25 finishes, actually a majority top 20 finishes, which is ridiculous. So obviously something's working. And who else saw a man draining all of these putts but a Wyndham Clark, who requested the same putter from Odyssey and said, I'll pay you. And Odyssey went, okay, that's fine. Here you go, my man. And so it's funny to me that you have this putter, right, that has two top fives in the U.S. Open, and everybody's talking about it. Literally 2 weeks ago, this putter was on Facebook Marketplace for like $35 secondhand, right? Yeah. Same exact specifications as Ricky and Wyndham were using. You're now looking at this putter on Google for over $400. And it's just because I don't make it anymore.
At least.
And it is crazy to me because, first of all, people, I don't want to burst your bubble. This putter's not going to help you, dude.
It's not going to do what you think it's going to do.
It's not, man. Like, does it work for Ricky's swing? Sure. Does it work for Wyndham's swing? Sure. That's mostly just self-created confidence. You got to remember, like, a lot of putting is the idea that the putter is helping you. Is the putter actually helping you? I'm sure there's some science behind that. I'm sure there is. Is it that convincing? For an amateur, probably not. For a professional, remember, we've talked about this. Any little bit, any little edge that you can get helps. And sometimes that edge just has to be mental, right? Like, you look at, you know, Ricky's last very poor performance prior to his kind of tear here was the Arnold Palmer, where it came T31, which isn't bad. But you give a guy a new putter, and he starts rolling putts with it, starts hitting really good putts, making long bombs, right? And he goes, wow, this putter has completely changed my game. I'm a new guy. I have new confidence in my golf game. Is it the putter? Who really knows? But really, it could just be the confidence of when he stands over that putter. He's like, I have nothing to worry about. This putter is going to do all the work for me. His thoughts are clear. He's not overthinking every swing when it comes to his putts. And he's two putting, one putting, everything, you know? So to ask you, Rick, do you think it's the putter or the man putting?
It better be, because I'm on eBay right now, and there's currently a auction going for a Odyssey versus Jailbird putter. And there are 36 bids in at the moment. So there are people that are going, there is a person that's going to be paying the price that I'm about to tell you. Can you guess how much? You said 400 was the number you saw. That I'll give you a hint. It's that was the more minimum. Than that.
Okay. Is it four digits?
It is four digits.
Oh my God, people! It's not a Scott Cameron. It's an Odyssey.
There is 20 hours left on this bid, and it is currently sitting at $1,293.
No, that's
someone will be paying that much money for this putter that, to be completely honest, probably isn't that great. It's probably just a confidence thing.
Look, there's usually pretty good reasons why companies will stop making putters, right? Now, the thing about the whole Versa line of Odyssey putters has many different types between mallets and blades, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And this was one of the mallet ones that they had that just didn't perform well commercially. And so they just stopped making it because nobody was buying it. Everybody wanted the white hot. And now everybody wants a Jailbird. And Callaway's now kind of stuck in a situation where they don't make it anymore. So they're not profiting off of this anymore. Do they start making it again? Because once they start making it again, then the shine's going to be off. And here you are with probably millions of product not selling anymore. So this is probably going to be a one-off. We're probably never going to talk about this putter ever again. But it's just a very funny thing to have happen.
Hey guys, we're just going to take an aside here to hear from our partners. First up is shankitgolf.com. Go ahead and visit their website. They got all sorts of things for you. They got golf towels, golf polos, stuff to mark your balls. They got all sorts of hats. They have everything that you're going to need to look your best on the golf course and feel your best on the golf course. Go ahead and at checkout, use code FTT15 for 15% off your order. You're not only helping yourself save money, but you're helping us get a little bit of that scratch on the side so we can bring you the best content that we can. Again, go ahead and check out shankitgolf.com for all your golf apparel needs. If you haven't heard before, Dr. John Murray is now a Titleist performance expert. That's right, he is someone who can help improve your body's swing connection. His medical background plus his Titleist certification can help you improve your golf game however you want. You want to have less pain? Dr. Murray can help. You want to create longevity in your career? He can help. Sick of getting out driven by your buddies? He can do that too. Check out Dr. John Murray at jmurraytpi on Instagram, or reach out to him via email at jmurraytpi@gmail.com. Once again, that's jmurraytpi and jmurraytpi@gmail.com. I've already gone to him for my first screening. It went so well. I really felt like we identified some of the negative portions of my golf swing. I've already started doing my stretches to improve my golf game, and I'm interested to see how that translates into my second session. Go ahead and check him out on those platforms I listed already. He's great. He's great at what he does. All right, back to the episode.
It's just so random how these things can truly impact the economy of one single golf club. Remember the Cobra drivers when Bryson DeChambeau was hitting it like 400 yards?
Yeah.
Everybody was buying a Cobra driver. Our friend Colin Faraday has a Cobra driver, or at least had in the past. I believe he's got it TaylorMade now. But it's weird just seeing the equipment economy ebb and flow with professionals who are performing well, because unless you guys are getting fittings, which if you are, that's awesome. It's actually a really good thing to do for your game if you have that kind of, you know, available funds to you. Just because Ricky Fowler has the RF Cobra blades and has shot shape ability doesn't mean that's going to help you.
Okay? It's going to hurt you.
Yeah. Don't try and hit what the professionals hit. It's not going to go well for you. For example, Titleist Pro V1 golf ball. Don't even get me started on that, people. If you're an amateur who says, I only use Pro V1s, A, did you take out a loan? Because those are expensive. B, it's not helping your game, man. If you're over a 2 handicap, 3 handicap, this isn't helping your game. It's meant for shot shaping. You can't shape your shots. We know you can't. It might look like you can. Call it a slice, okay? And we just got to get up. We got to get past this, okay? Use the cheap ones, people. Go to Walmart. Get yourself some Top Flights. Get you some noodles, right? It's going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. Just a weird concept when it comes to golf equipment. But to keep moving forward here, two guys I also want to talk about before we wrap up U.S. Open talk here. Rory McIlroy and Justin Thomas, two of the, you know, quintessential guys you think about when you think about professional golf, right? Rory McIlroy yet again falls short of a win. It feels like he's just doing that with insane regularity recently. If you look at his even if you just look at his last 5 starts, a T47 at the Wells Fargo, where I'm not quite sure what happened there. T7 at the PGA Championship, T7 at the Memorial, T9 at the RBC Canadian Open, and a 2 at the U.S. Open. And if there's one thing we know about all those starts, is he was in contention and or had the lead at one point.
It's so funny.
It's, man, you just have to look at that and wonder, how could this not rattle his cage, right?
At this point, it has to be.
All the right things, man.
At this point, it has to be.
He's doing all the right things. Like I just said, he holds the record for the best score to not win a major in an entire weekend with 271 strokes. That's going to wear on you.
Mentally. Oh, yeah.
You know?
For sure.
You literally could not have done any better and not won a golf tournament.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell yourself that you couldn't have done anything else all you want. But guess what? You clearly could have. Mm-hmm. Because someone else did, you know?
That's fair. I guess that's, you know, got to be a different mentality. But, you know, you look at it statistically here, he was 4.2 strokes gained total above the average at the USO, at the US Open. The only one that did better was Ricky. You know, that's just an insane thing to kind of wrap your head around. So, Rick, if you're Ricky, or not Ricky, Rick, if you're Rory McIlroy right now, do you just keep your head down and keep grinding and hope that a wind will find you? Or do you try and change some things up? Because, man, this is tough to watch.
Well, we saw what happened last time he tried to change things up and chase the distance. So maybe just keep stay true, I guess.
Stay true.
It's kind of your only option at this point. I mean, you're top 10 in all the majors. I mean, you would think it would come find you at some point, but also at the same time, you got to play well on Sunday. There's not really any other way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's what you tell everybody, right? It's like, look, you got to do better on Sundays. You can go into Sunday with the lead all you want. We all know that means absolutely nothing. Right.
Yeah.
It's gotta be tough, but honestly, if I'm him or I'm one of his like sports coaches or I'm his caddy, I tell him do the Tony Finau. Keep your head down, man. Just keep moving, keep doing what you're doing, because clearly it works. It just needs to work at the right times. Like, remember when Tony Finau came in second 3 times in a row?
Yeah.
He didn't change a damn thing about his swing, the way he approached the game at all. He just kept on trucking, and eventually the wins kept happening, and he won like 2 tournaments in 5 weeks. You know, it will turn around. It just, you never know when it's going to turn around. Remember last year, even by the end of the season, no one even thought Rory McIlroy had a chance at the FedEx Cup. Here he is with the FedEx Cup championship under his belt and is the defending champion last year. So
exactly,
literally anything can happen, especially going down the stretch here. We're only 3 majors in. We still have the big one. I think it could turn around for him, but definitely a betting fade would be Rory McIlroy. Nobody should be betting on that man to win tournaments,
right? Yeah, I definitely would not be.
And you know, I'm not a good sports bettor by any means, but you shouldn't be betting on him. That's for sure. Another guy to talk about here, man, Justin Thomas.
Ugh.
Ooh, you know, here's his last 5 starts for you. T25 at the RBC Heritage, T14 at the Wells Fargo, T65 at the PGA Championship, cut at the Memorial, cut at the US Open. You know, it's pretty bad. And actually, in his exact words, quote unquote, it's all pretty shitty. That'll take the cake right there for you.
Yeah, that's all that really needs to be said. I mean,
yeah,
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah,
I will say this though. I think the PGA has him rattled because he was in such a good spot at one point during the PGA and just blew it.
Yep. Yeah. He just fell apart there and has not come back since. Cut at the Memorial, cut here. And not just a cut here, but let's not forget he finished tied for 152nd out of 156 players.
Yeah.
And that's not a spot that you will find a guy like Justin Thomas usually in, right? But the numbers don't lie. He was 156 in strokes gained off the tee. He was 154th in strokes gained tee to green, 147th in strokes gained approach to green, 144th strokes gained putting. Was literally almost dead last in every single category you could think of.
Yeah.
And that is just not who he is. And I think he does know that, but it's got to be hard on a guy to know how good you have been and can be, and then have this happen to you 2 weeks in a row and for the last 3 consistent starts, you know?
Yeah, it's tough. It's definitely a mental game with him at this point, and he's got to work through it and figure it out.
Now, I think what, you know, all of us amateurs for sure can take away is his quote after his round on Friday after getting cut. He said, quote, "It's weird because I felt like I was playing the best I've played in a really long time this week, end of last week. It's a funny game. You know, it can leave you speechless, good and bad. And right now, it's unfortunately the bad. Once I'm able to kind of reflect and figure out what I can learn and get better from, you know, it'll end up good. But it sucks right now." It's a really good outlook.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's definitely nice to hear the positivity, even if you have to dig a little bit for it.
Right.
But right now it's just, it's tough. It's so tough. You got to just kind of do the Tony Finau, keep your head low, play your game and just let it work out. It'll work out at some point. And even if that means playing in a lower level event, which I know we don't have really that many of left this year, since we have one more major yet. We have the FedEx Cup playoffs, all that jazz. But like, you got to find something. You got to dig deep, finish out the season, and then maybe after the FedEx Cup, just take a few months off and come back strong at Hawaii or something.
Yeah, and I mean, let's also not forget that, you know, he's not that far off from the top 70. He is out of it, right? But he's not that far off. He's at 78. So if he makes a kind of a late season push, he can find himself in the FedEx Cup playoffs. So, yeah, I feel like this is just, you know, kind of repeating ourselves here, but you got to do the Tony Finau. You just got to stick right to it and just keep your head down, keep moving forward, because eventually they will start to fall for you. Last little bit to talk about the U.S. Open here before we look ahead at the Travelers. Some players were complaining a little bit about the course condition. So it's looking like a couple of guys, looks like guys such as Matt Fitzpatrick, Brooks Koepka, Victor Hovland, all guys that made the cut, by the way, and got paychecks. So this isn't just guys complaining because they got cut, you know. They were complaining that the course had tendencies to be repetitive. Brooks Koepka specifically was one guy that said, you know, he didn't really enjoy the fact that, you know, every single tee shot you hit almost every single day wound up in the same spot because of the way that it was sloping, and it all kind of just sloped in the one area all the time. Everybody was hitting their shots from the same place basically all 4 days. Victor Hovland kind of had a different complaint where he was more saying that he didn't like that the fairways were too sloped and he couldn't stick to them. So I guess maybe he was just hitting different spots. But he was also talking about the 290-yard par 3, which, again, we've said this on the podcast before. If it's over 220 yards, it doesn't need to be a par 3. Just put a fairway on there, make it a par 4, okay?
Yeah, if I have to pull my driver out to get within 50 feet of the green, probably still not even reach the green because I'm a little bitch.
Yep.
It's not a par 3.
It's not.
Like, I get that these guys hit straight bombs and they can hit a 3-wood 290, but there's no need for that. There's really not. Just move the tee box back 40 yards, make it a short par 4.
Yeah, especially short par fours are so fun too, because, you know, you got eagle opportunities out of that, and there's nothing fun about a egregiously long par 3.
Yeah, well, we had a par four on the course. I forget what hole it was, but people were driving the green on it.
Yeah,
that's what's fun the to difference? Watch.
Yeah,
like, what's the difference?
The difference is that one is fun to watch, and the other is just an absolute struggle to win. Did you, as a viewer, I would say, did you have any complaints about the course layout, the way it was playing, et cetera?
It was kind of tough to tell because I really only got to watch, I actually almost watched all of Sunday, but I didn't really get to see too much of the first rounds except for a little bit on Friday. It was kind of boring. Weirdly enough, like, there was the whole thing about how many tickets they sold, that there was like 9,000 general admission tickets, basically. Like, you have a major championship. Like, you got to have, like, I expect with a major championship, what we saw with Phil Mickelson a few years ago at the PGA, where there was just hundreds of thousands of people following him, like, basically Tiger in his prime-esque kind of stuff is what I expect to see at a major championship. And there just wasn't even close to that here. Like, on the 18th hole at the end of the tournament, people started running and it barely filled up around the hole.
Yep.
Which, it should be so crowded. And then I did see a thing. It was a picture of everybody around the green with their phones out. And it was like, not a phone in sight. Everyone just enjoying the moment.
Everybody's which, enjoying the game, you know,
which is a whole other problem. Like, there's no reason you need your phone out for that. You're never going to watch that putt again. But anyway, yeah, it was a little boring. I hate when there's a fairway that one side of the fairway is 100 feet higher above sea level than the other side of the fairway. So yeah. I think you said it was Brooks was saying.
It was Victor saying it.
Where you hit the one side of the fairway and your ball just ends up completely on the other side and you're hitting from the same spot every day.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Yeah, and that, and you know, really when it comes to professional golfers, they want to have the ability to, you know, put the ball where they want to. That's kind of the whole draw of they're a professional, that they have that kind of power that they can put it precisely where they want to. And this just didn't offer you that because everything would funnel to the same spot. So everybody's hitting shots from the same area all the time. And then eventually comes Sunday, that spot on the fairway is peppered with divots.
Uh-huh.
And you wind up in a divot in a bad spot on 18, which didn't happen, but, you know, could have. We're talking about a whole different type of tournament here with guys trying to hit out divots. So it's one of those things where, you know, LACC, you know, what hasn't always been a PGA Tour course, you know, it got revamped and that's why it has the U.S. Open. But as far as the complaints are concerned, I'll ask you, Rick, how do you feel about professional golfers complaining about course conditions?
I assume I have a different opinion than you.
Right.
Based on the way you just chuckled.
Right.
I think they have a right to complain. Like, you expect, especially at a major championship, you expect the best course conditions possible. And I don't think there's any reason that at a major championship you need an aggressively sloped fairway. Like,
right.
There's other ways to make this course hard besides than just saying, hey, you have to hit the left side of the fairway and then you're going to be shooting your next shot from the right side of the fairway. Like, make a lot of turns, make some, like, they have the high rough. You already have the high rough. Why do you need all this other stuff? You know what I mean?
No, and that's fair. I just didn't know about, like, hearing professional golfers complain about the conditions of a course that looked optically gorgeous.
Yeah, but I mean, you think about it this way. When we used to go to Sweetwater,
right,
and it had just rained, mm-hmm. We're like, well, this is fucking stupid. There's puddles everywhere, but we paid $10 to be there. So it's like, can you really?
You can't complain, you know? You get
what you paid for. And that's how I kind of look at it, is like, we're complaining about that. We're not going to shoot well, whether it's good or not.
Yeah.
They're going to shoot well either way.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, it could be the most perfect golf course known to mankind. It can be the mecca of golf, heaven, if you would, and I will still play terribly. It'll be brutal. It will be there. I can have not one complaint about the course at all, and I'd still play horrible.
All you have to do is just make it links, because I can't play links.
Oh my god, you just make it look wide open and inviting. I will find a way.
I'll be looking at a pin and be like, that's probably like what, 130, and then I look at my thing, it's like 200.
You're like, no, it's definitely not. I'm not going to listen to it anyway.
Mostly in New Jersey, but we don't have to talk about it.
Yeah, we have a working theory that New Jersey is more of an enigma than an actual state. on this plane. But hey, what are you going to do? Yeah, so I just found that was interesting that, you know, it seems like a lot of the field had some complaints about the way the course was working out. So that's definitely something to kind of keep track of, especially when it comes to major championship golf. The USGA is never going to want to hear about complaints about the course they chose. So
I didn't hear any complaints from Wyndham Clark, though.
No, not one. And that's, you know, probably because he has been a trophy now. Oh, and he's a major champion, which, you know, will always kind of carry for any golfer. Right. Let's also not forget Gary Woodland is a major champion. Let's talk about that a little bit. But alrighty, I think, Rick, unless I am mistaken, that's everything for the U.S. Open. So let's move forward here and talk about the golf to come, which is the Travelers. We'll get those power rankings if our boy Rob has posted them. At this point, it is 9 p.m., and if he hasn't posted them, he needs to get his life together. We've been having some troubles with this guy so far. But let's get into it. Yes, of course, there they are. Except he posted an hour ago, man. If we were recording on our normal schedule, we wouldn't have been getting these. That's ridiculous, Rob. What are you doing at 8 p.m., my guy? All righty, Rick, you know the rules. Five guys, burgers and fries. You got it?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Rory McIlroy. Xander Schauffele. Scotty Scheffler. Patrick Cantlay. And Victor Hovland.
That's a good top five. Let's go. Go Cantlay five. Rory four. Who is the other ones?
You have Scotty Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, and Victor Hovland.
Victor three, Xander two, Scotty one.
My boy, you've done it.
Did I?
My man, you did it.
Let's go. You did second it, Rick. Time.
No, let's go. Okay, that's now two times in what, 120-some episodes?
Yeah, but you got to look at the smaller sample size. That's two that's times fair. In the last, when like,
when
10.
Was the last win?
Do you two remember? Times in the last, like, 10. I don't remember when the last time was.
Two in the last 10?
I think it was definitely within the last 10 weeks, though.
Yeah, you got two Ws in the last 10 starts like that? Rick Landis, you are coming up, man. You're coming up in the world here. All righty. Yes, Rick got it correct. Patrick Cantlay, Rory McIlroy, Victor Hovland, Xander Schauffele, Scotty Scheffler. Let's find out why Rob thinks it that way. Patrick Cantlay, number five, forever famous for spinning a 60 as an amateur at TPC River Highlands in 2011. It's almost as dubious that he's yet to wrangle a top 10 in eight tries. Since 2018, he's 5 for 5 with a T11, two T13s, two T15s, and a scoring average of 67.5. Wow, that's all that for fifth place. I wonder how the other guys.
Yeah, geez. The other guys must be gods.
I was going to say, what's happening here? All right, number four, Rory McIlroy, in a better place mentally, and it shows.
Does it?
Rob, are we watching the same golf?
Where does it show? I'm just curious.
Where does it show?
Like, does it show on his chest under the shirt that he ripped in half?
I was going to say, just because he hasn't ripped his shirt yet doesn't mean he's in a better mental place. Okay, Rob? And it shows. I think it's the best part. Hey, clearly, it is showing how mentally tough this guy is. He's definitely not crumbling under any circumstances. Since the PGA Championship, he's placed T7, T7, T9, and solo second. Yes, we just went over that, Rob, but also remember where he was on all those tournaments into Sunday. Also, no stranger to TPC River Highlands, where he's perfect in four trips, each yielded a top 20, and he's still after his first top 10. I get it. And see, I really think his last four starts depends on your perspective as a golf fan, you know?
Yeah.
Cause like Rob's like, oh, clearly he's got a little magic touch here. He's got four top tens in a row, which yeah, if you zoom out and you didn't know any backstory, you'd be like, wow, that's one hell of a four starts, you know? It just, when you look at the scorecards and see where he was in contention every single one of those Sundays, you'd be like, and he didn't get one win out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So number three, Victor Hovland, was an improved short game and, more importantly, the confidence to rely on it. The challenge now is to maintain all clubs on deck, currently second in the all-around ranking and consecutive cuts made, 21, T11 in his last Travelers in 2020. My man Victor Hovland has 21 straight made cuts.
Making money.
That's 21 straight paychecks, and that's always fun.
Yeah, that's good.
We talked about that last week, right? About his paychecks coming in the mail. Number two, Captain America himself, and you know, really a guy that I thought was going to win the U.S. Open for just because he's an American legend. Xander Schauffele entering his title defense season. Rob Bolton has used title defense season SZN. He did that. Oh, man, Rob was like, that's right, kids. I'm hip. I am hip and happening. No doubt disappointed to squander his latest chance to make a run at a major breakthrough, but the feels of success at TPC River Highlands gotta help. Yeah, I do think coming off of a U.S. Open performance like that is going to help him. Also, let's just take a look at his last couple of starts. I feel like he's been on a tear here recently. That's a lot of green. That is a lot. My goodness. Since March, T19, T5, T10, 4, T4, 2, T18, T24, his worst of his last 10, and T10 at the US Open.
Not bad.
That's a ripper right there.
Good numbers.
Holy. And, you know, let's not forget the back-to-back wins in last July. So he's coming off a pretty good stretch of golf here. He was 6th in the official world golf rankings. How bad it, X? X going to give it to you. But it's kind of hard to be better than the guy in the number one spot right yeah. here. Scottie Scheffler. If you ever wanted needing an example of the invincible difference between winning and losing, he's the current case study. 2 wins, a T2, 3/3, 2/4, a T5. And that's just in the last 4 months, 4th start at the Travelers. I saw this thing on Twitter, and I gotta see if I can find it again. I think Dan Rappaport reported this, or as a comment on one of his posts. Let's take
a look. He's just so good at golf.
He's just so damn good at golf. And you really gotta wonder, is it because he's just so happy in life? Like, what? How? How? Yes, here it is. In 2023 so far, 17 for 17 cuts made, 16 of those 17 top 25, 13 of those 17 top 10, 10 of those 17 top 5, and that's not even including the wins that he already has this season. So just an insane, insane stretch of golf.
So much money.
So much money, right? Like, I obviously, yes, being good at golf and, you know, having the success on a PGA Tour and kind of being right now what looks like a shoo-in for a Hall of Fame golfer is all great and dandy, right? But the paychecks have got to feel good. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you're seeing that bank account continuously rise. And really, from all accounts about his life, he's really just using that money to pay for some, you know, maybe extra breadsticks from Pizza Hut. I'm not sure. But he's just so easy to root for, and that's gotta say something about it. But that is gonna be it for this episode of From the Tips. As always, everybody, thank you so much for the constant support you guys have been showing us. The social medias have been a bit more active, which is great. We're getting more active on them. You guys are continuously hitting play on the episodes, helping us get to our major goal for the end of the year, which I'm pushing for 3,000 listens by the end of 2023. We are on track here, people. We're at 2,500, so we can get this done by December. I do believe that. So go listen to the episodes. Tell your friends listen to the episodes. Hell, listen to it twice if you miss our voice that much. But thank you, as always, for the continued support. Go ahead and follow us on Instagram at @FromTheTips_pod and on Twitter at @FTT_pod. Those socials I was just talking about. You guys are actually helping us get a little bit more active on there, so that's kind of fun. Again, thank you so much, and we out!
Thanks, guys. See you later.